This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. We're turning our attention now to the legal sphere. Recent news headlines regarding the month-long prison sentence that was meted out to a 64-year-old man for stealing sardines, mouthwash, and Nescafe from a convenience store have struck a nerve with the public.
Lawyers and the public have questioned the prison sentence given the circumstances of the case and the availability of alternative punishment under the Offenders Compulsory Attendance Act 1954, such as community service.
So this case and others like it have put a spotlight on the disparate treatment of criminal defendants based on income levels and status, especially when juxtaposed against the case of a prominent political figure contesting to be allowed to serve his prison sentence under house arrest.
Well, what kind of guidelines are Malaysian judges held to when deciding on a criminal sentence? And is there equal access to justice under our legal system? For a better understanding on how these sentencing rules operate, we have on the line with us lawyer Edmund Bond of Amir Bond Advocates. Edmund, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Can you paint us a picture in terms of what are the principles or guidelines that Malaysian judges abide by in determining the sentence for a criminal conviction?
Normally in sentencing cases, the prosecutor will ask for a higher sentence based on aggravating circumstances. The defense counsel would then ask for a lower sentence based on mitigating circumstances. The judges have quite a wide discretion and they will look at previous cases, sentencing patterns, and previous judicial precedent. So it's a lot of it based on case law. And it looks into whether the mitigating circumstances are sufficient to reduce the sentence to one of probably binding over or community service without going to jail. And also looking at whether the person has had previous convictions or not. So the discretion is actually really quite wide based on case law. We have only in our laws maximum sentences and minimum sentences, and the judges have to follow that. But apart from that, a range of sentences is made available to judges based on their quite strict discretion.
And on that note, right, I mean, what are the avenues to contest that sentence, you know, if you're saying that the judges have that amount of discretion then?
You have to appeal the sentence. If the sentence we feel is wrong, you have to appeal it. The person that has been convicted and sentenced of the crime can file an appeal, or a higher court like the High Court can call up the case if the judge looks at the newspaper or reads about it and says, oh, I think this is quite unfair, let me check the case. So there are these two avenues for the sentence to be reviewed.
And Edmund, can we take a step back? Basically, you're saying that there are no sentencing guidelines for judges. It's purely discretionary. So then what are some of the factors that judges take into account in sentencing?
Unfortunately, we have no sentencing council that has come up with sentencing guidelines. So this recommendation has been made by the Bar Council on numerous occasions to the government. It was also made recently, a few years ago, when we wrote the report on the abolishment of the mandatory death penalty, but government has not taken it up yet. So the time really has come for government to set up first a sentencing council, and second, for the sentencing council to provide for guidelines in terms of the types of offences. Of course, it's very fact-specific, but you have this case which you mentioned just now about someone stealing groceries, very poor, and really for this type of cases, we shouldn't be seeing accused persons going to jail for it. I've seen cases, and I've actually done cases where very similar facts have arisen, and judges have just sentence the person to a binding over, which means the person doesn't need to go to jail.
Edmund, I'm curious because sending a person to jail does incur cost, and we know that our prison system currently is quite overcrowded. Do judges take into account those types of considerations when they make their decision?
Some judges do. There is no fixed criteria to take into account what costs of the prisoner entails to government. Mm. But some judges do when it's argued before the judge by the lawyer or by the accused person. However, for this type of cases, sometimes we also need to be fair to the judges because we don't actually know the factual scenario of the particular case, except from reading it from the newspaper. However, if you look at the case on the face of it, it sounds quite unfair. And we've come across many of these cases off and on. Mm. It's nothing quite new. The point of that needs to be made is that to remedy this type of situation, to make sure that there is more consistent practice in sentencing, we need to have those sentencing guidelines and sentencing counsel. If government does not want to set up sentencing counsel, the courts, actually through the Chief Justice's office, can actually come up with their own sentencing guidelines in consultation with the bar and lawyers.
And do you know whether that talks have been in progress at all? I mean, are we any closer to getting these sentencing guidelines?
No, not that I know of. It's been recommended many years already. And I think when we have had government ministers coming to say we need to reform legal aid, we need to have a public defender's office, we should not be forgetting the sentencing council, which, for example, works very well in the UK.
And Edmund, I have a question. How much does one's personal circumstance affect sentencing? I mean, after all, justice is supposed to have a mercy element to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, quite a lot. So the main mitigating factors would really be the personal circumstances of the accused person. So if the person is young, the person has had no previous convictions, or the person is really, really old, or the person looks after the family, these are mitigating circumstances that the courts will look into. And the courts are supposed to balance those mitigating circumstances with the seriousness of the crime.
And
if you look at this particular case, I think it should be reviewed.
It's interesting because you talk about the case examples being about age, about the responsibility. In this dimension, they talk a bit about the poverty element of the defendant in question, right? How does the poverty penalty affect trial outcomes in your past experience then?
Yeah, so legally, it is actually a human right. You have a lot of cases in the courts where accused persons are not represented at all. They don't come out in the press, but you go to the courts today and you see a lot of poor people, a lot of unrepresented when they come before the courts for sentencing. The Malaysian Bar and the National Legal Aid Foundation has tried to plug that gap, but it's still not sufficient because we don't have enough lawyers and enough resources and funds to be able to cover the whole spectrum of poor people from the lower income group who face this type of cases.
Mm.
So this gap is really huge. Now we also have we don't have legal aid also for migrant workers in a lot of civil cases, and a lot of these foreign workers who want to seek justice are unable to do so. Although our legal aid program supports foreign workers if they are sentenced for a crime, but for civil cases and other types of cases, they are not represented.
So we just saw yesterday how de facto Law Minister Dato' Azlina Othman commented on legal aid reform. What do you think needs to be the priority when we look at that?
So we need to complete the coverage. We need to ensure that for civil and criminal cases, there is sufficient coverage for all the accused persons, whether they are Malaysians or non-Malaysians. The suggestion that has been made by government to have a public defender's office is a very good one. We have an AG's office that is a public prosecutor. We also have to have a public defender's office that actually have a fixed permanent staff and lawyers to be able to run those cases. At the moment, legal aid relies on the Malaysian Bar. So the Malaysian Bar of 15, 16, 17,000 of us, we probably have about 5% of us doing legal aid work. And that really is insufficient to cover the whole spectrum of people who need legal aid.
Mm. Edmund, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Edmund Bond, lawyer with Amir Bond Advocates, talking to us about how sentencing is carried out in the Malaysian legal system, also the gaps that exist when it comes to access to justice and just the legal avenues, legal aid that's available to all defendants. A lot that needs to be focused on.
Yeah, it looks like the reform when it comes to the legal system, many issues pending. One, of course, is the separation of duties between the AG and the public prosecutor that continues. Now we've got sentencing guidelines and legal aid. I'm sure there are many more to go.
For sure. I think the issue here is for the sentencing guidelines, how do you make sure that it also, you know, gives supports the discretion of the judges there?
Well, it's 7:48 in the morning. We're going to head into some messages, but we will come back to discuss the dangers of unsupervised social media use for children's well-being. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.